Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. Been in business for over a couple decades. We specialize in building portfolios, helping people to save and invest in a long-term, solid, conservative fashion. The nice thing about what we do, folks, you'll never lose it. You're always going to have it. It's a hard asset. It's private and anonymous. What we sell into investment portfolios is not 1099 reportable. So that means you're not being reported when you buy or you sell. A lot of these companies you deal with out there, people don't even realize what they're getting into. They pick up the phone or they see something on TV or they go on the internet. And they don't realize that these, you know, major companies that are, you know, calling them majors deceptive because they don't necessarily do as much business as you'd think they do. They just have a lot of people to spread it out, and then they maximize profit. So really, you know, the infrastructure of a business is built typically by profit. Obviously, sales volume affects it depending on the industry, but profit really is what pays the bills. And so these kinds of organizations that are out there, they have different stipulations and requirements when they're working, you know, the whole, you know, international or national thing. And a lot of them have policies where they just flat require social security numbers and information like this. And a lot of times what they'll do is conduct a transaction and then come back and say, oh, by the way, we didn't get your social security number and all your data. And you'll be like, I'm not giving it to you. You know, it's private. And they'll say, oh, well, then we'll just tell the IRS that you refused to disclose it. And we've had a couple customers go through that and actually have the IRS begin to harass them because Goldline and I can't remember the other one. I've seen him on TV before. It wasn't Rosalind, but someone like that did the same thing to him. And then the IRS starts sending them dirty letters saying, you're not, you know, cooperating with our tax laws. Ugly, folks. We get people calling and they'll say, or coming in and saying, well, how much can I buy without being having it reported to the IRS? The answer is as much as you want or as little as you want. There is no reporting, okay, when you buy. There's no reporting when you sell. What there is there's different requirements. There are certain things like back in 1980, they created what's called the Broker Reporting Act, okay? And that was for the commodities exchange, the COMEX, for trading precious metals. And they put in some requirements for reporting. And it applied, first of all, to products that were available at the time, tradable on a commodities or a COMEX exchange contract, and over a certain amount. So basically, like a kilo bar of gold reportable. Anything, a number of gold items like 1 ounce gold bars, Canadian maple leaves, and Krugerrands, if you sell over 24 in a 24-hour period of time, that was based on gold at a certain price, that merits reporting a 1099. But the thing is, we don't, first of all, sell you that product. That's not our recommended product. People want gold bars because they think they're cheaper. They might be cheaper. You might save a percent or two, but I mean, they're issued by private companies. They're not a globally recognized mint that made them. And, you know, so, I mean, that just opens up another can of worms I'll try to touch on here in a sec. But we try to recommend, or we do recommend, and we create portfolios out of non-reportable items. We love U.S. Coins, U.S. gold, old or new. The cool thing is the old gold is now trading for the same price as the new gold. In other words, gold, $20 gold pieces, $10 gold pieces, $5 gold pieces from the late 1800s, early 1900s trade at the same level as modern American gold eagles with the same amount of gold in them, half ounce, 10th ounce, quarter ounce, whatever. Craziness. It's a great buy. And people think funny. I had a guy here the other day and he goes, well, if they're down that low, okay, so basically you're buying an antique gold coin for its gold price, right? Gold's gold. Whether it goes up or down, you own gold. So if it separates, if the premium takes off from the intrinsic value of the item, if that premium takes off, it's free money. So you can win two ways on these. One, an increase in the precious metals market, obviously. Two, any kind of an increase in the supply and demand component, which can be based on geopolitical affairs. It can be based just strictly on interest in the item. It can be based on an increase in the rare coin market, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's free money. And I had a guy the other day who was like, well, you know, I think if they're down that low, he goes, they must not be a very good investment. I think I'll go with the newer ones. And I'm like, how, just in my mind, did that logic just work? It's like, you're buying them for the price of gold, and if they're down that low all the way to the price of gold, and you know they're an antique and they're in nice shape and they have the same amount of gold. And I went down and he kind of looked at me and goes, yeah, you're right. But it was just funny how there's people that are opportunity seekers and there's people that are there's kind of a full gamut when I think about people I know. There's people that are out on the spectrum. Beyond opportunity seekers, they think they're going to find the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Those are the people who can get scammed and conned easy. Those are the ones who probably get pulled in by phishing emails and all that stuff. And they it's not always an intellectual thing either. I've seen a lot of times it can be. I think the greatest threat to those kinds of situations is people that are not overly intelligent or at least, maybe that's not the right word, maybe it's more unexperienced, ignorant in financial areas. But the most dangerous thing is kind of the Proverbs 18:2. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. And that kind of an attitude, if we're out there, we want to be the experts. We all know these people. We want to be the experts. We want to be the know-it-all, or I hope we don't. But, you know, that kind of a mentality is really, really destructive. And it comes from a deep-seated insecurity. I will admit, when I was young and banking and moving my way up, and I was always around guys who were older and more experienced than me. I had a pretty good run of insecurity there, and I was always a pick me kind of a guy. I just wanted to be noticed and respected for my knowledge or accomplishments. And then I finally realized, you know what? Who cares? I mean, I have God to please, not man. And once you learn that and you give it up, and then you take the other steps for Christ where you actually put others first, and the Bible says, count others better than yourselves. That's a true test of your heart condition and your humility. When people want to be, the expert and the know-it-all, and then they have to go out and, gather data. There's kind of the old school investigatory personality where, which I kind of had, but you had to go to great lengths to dig out information in the days of yore, public libraries and various resources, and now you go to Google. The problem with Google, you'd better be wise and smart and know what you're reading and know how to read it, and because there's so much rubbish out there, there is no editorial integrity. There used to be, I remember, in all my education, learning, the importance and significance of published documents. Published documents, once they're published, the liability for accuracy goes on to the publisher. It transfers from the writer to the publisher, primarily because the publisher has an editorial responsibility to make sure that it's 100% accurate and the buck stops there. I mean, you could not back then publish lies. I mean, unverifiable lies. You could have published opinions and state them as opinion. But even today, as I watch this, chapter 39 of the impeachment farce. You know, and I watch these people standing up there just spitting out lies, just opinionated garbage as if it's fact. And people don't realize this is orchestrated this way on purpose. This whole Trump impeachment thing, folks, this is designed specifically to cast extraordinary levels of doubt upon Trump. They want you to just think, you know, it is true. If you hear a lie long enough, you'll believe it. And the bigger the lie, the more you'll believe it. And if they just keep pumping this stuff at you, people grow weary. But the problem is people have already become weary of our government. And so the real question is, while the Democrats are trying to make people weary of Trump, are they becoming weary of the Democrats and their systems? And I hope so, because truth is more important to me than any political ties. If you seek the truth, you're going to end up at the right place. Politics is dirty stuff. Obviously, I'm involved at some level, and I've been involved at other levels at different times, and it's just, it becomes so dirty, and people really do have good intentions when they get in. At least the conservatives do, and liberals too, probably for the most part. There are some that get in for corrupt reasons or whatever, but they have good intentions going in, and the system beats them up and smacks them around. I mean, you look at the size and brevity, and you know, strength and power in D.C. I mean, if you've been there and you move around that city and you see the power and the strength, folks, it is terrifying. We are not. I just don't even see how that shell can be cracked. You see someone like Trump going into, as he calls it, the swamp, trying to drain the swamp and absolutely getting the hammer of a lifetime. The hammer, the hardest hammer that's ever been swung at a president in the United States of America, very similar to these dictatorial and socialistic countries that, you know, attempted coups, you know, using the courts. I mean, folks, do you understand how corrupt the democratic processing of this thing was? Absolutely crazy. The way they handled it. I mean, they were shutting down the Republicans at every step. They were denying, this is the first time in history, denying Republicans any of the witnesses that the Democrats objected to. Seriously? They didn't want, and now they're griping that the Republicans wouldn't vote for more witnesses. I mean, folks, come on. This is the biggest farce I've ever seen. Today, the vote passed in the Senate 51-49. Well, 51 to whatever. You know, 51 wins because there's 100 senators. 51-49, assuming everyone voted, but probably not. Fact of the matter is, they have voted away the probability or possibility of having witnesses. So that's over, right? And then the Democrats are on TV harping, and I'm listening to Fox News, and I'm like, folks, you know, Fox, they know what sells. And stirring the pot and stirring the water, they're giving this lady this nomenclature, not her name, but that's what I was kind of laughing about. But anyway, I can't even remember her name right now. She's a Democrat, and I probably don't want to give her a promotion anyway. But she's on there just rambling and babbling and rambling and trashing on Trump and talking in circles. And, of course, how great she is, and the people love her, and that they, you know, they'll understand that she's not in Iowa, that she's in the arena, you know, doing her work, the arena. That's what she is. You know, it's just crazy how nuts we've become with this stuff. I can't even, it's like, Lord, bring truth to our country, bring clarity, bring, you know, honesty and purity, and help us to see the truth as it stands in front of us, you know. And God says in the Bible, in Proverbs, that wisdom cries out from everywhere, from the tops of the mountains and the top of the gates and from the top of the buildings. There's wisdom everywhere screaming at you. This is Miss Wisdom herself telling you this. There's wisdom all over. So we have to put our head down, close our ears, and as humans, we are so subject to suggestion. If we hear it long enough, we believe it. It's really sad, which, by the way, when you have kids or if you have kids or grandkids, you got to watch how you talk to them, not just what you say around them, but more or less what you say to them about themselves. I mean, it is amazing how, you know, you can see people, the way they raise their kids, either with incredible insecurities by babying them, to the point where they don't like work and their work ethic struggles, to, you know, irresponsibility from not, you know, letting responsibility settle on them, to, you know, high bars, incredible standards, not pressure. I've seen dads, a couple dads I know of, literally, both of them ironically had sons who were pitching in baseball, and the dads were both, in my opinion, trying to live their failed, you know, athletic career out through their children. And in both cases, these young boys in their teens had incredible talent, and they and their dads both kept training them and training them and training them until they finally threw their arm out for life. In both cases, both of these boys ended up in the marijuana business, selling it, tattoos everywhere, and then hanging out with non-believers, you know, and just kind of going down that road, all because they basically had their spirit broke by their dad because he wouldn't, you know, stop. And it was always like how good they were when they were young. I've seen that. I've seen, you know, I've seen it all. I mean, not that I'm like Solomon or something, but it's so amazing what the sphere of influence we have. Someone was texting me some stuff on General McChrystal's commencement speech, I think at West Point, on leadership. And, you know, the fact that he was saying that, you know, leaders basically rise out of challenging situations. But that's only partially true, because in order to do that, people have to make decisions to become leaders. Leaders are, you know, we can say leaders are not born, they're made. I'm sure there's another saying out there somewhere else that says the opposite, but it doesn't make sense because, yeah, if you just let everybody grow up, you know, the way they are, they might, you might get a leader here and there. But see, you got to remember, leadership is not command. Leadership is not authoritarian. It's not totalitarian. You know, leadership is magnetism. It's drive and magnetism. And it's kind of like in my business, I believe that, well, in any business, I believe that you should never ask someone to do something that you can't do yourself, or won't or whatever, can't do yourself as good or better, basically. And I'm not saying you have to be an expert at everything. You know, if I have someone cleaning and I ask them to clean, I don't have to be a better cleaner than them. But if I'm in a specific profession, a very specific, like in my case, I cannot bring people in to lead or manage unless they, too, have been down that road and through the trenches. And then it becomes, how bad do you want it? You know, do you have the elite aloofness where you think you're above that and, you know, you're up in the ivory tower? Or do you have that everyone's my peer, everyone's better than me, as Jesus said, basically, you know, the first or last and the last first, and you just hop in the trenches and just learn and dig. And but then you have to have, then what you find is the real successful people, they're living it. They're studying it on their own time. They're looking up stuff. They're following up on things that are, you know, selling or for sale or incoming or whatever. They just have their heart in it. You can see that kind of thing, that sort of a leadership. The important thing, like what I was saying, is never ask someone to do something you won't do yourself. But leadership is lead. You've heard lead by example. Or how about Gonzaga has servant leadership, servanthood leadership. And you're and that's sort of an oxymoron in our mind. We're like servanthood leadership. And a lot of people don't really understand the relevance of servanthood. It is biblically. Let's see here. So it's servanthood is kind of the core pillar of Jesus' ministry. But we in America, we honestly put that aside. We ignore it in detail, in depth. I can't even believe how far that has gone from our walk as believers. I quote, spiritually grew up in an environment with navigators in college that was designed around servanthood. It was the theme and topic of weekend seminars and even longer stuff that I went to was just servant. And without servanthood, there was nothing. Jesus washed the disciples' feet out of servanthood. I want you to think for a second, just realistically, if everyone here walked around in dirt and dust, and we had our shoes on once in a while that we wrapped around our feet, but you know, they aren't real heavy duty and they don't have Vibram soles like we do now. But the whole thing is that, you know, their feet become just dirty and stinky. And what's in the street in that dirt in those times? Okay. Everything from, you name it, right? People's waste products probably get dumped there sometimes. We know animals do. We know there was, you know, goats and sheep and pigs and cattle and, you know, horses running all the time and pulling things. And I mean, continuously you have animal waste. You can imagine. I mean, people spit in the streets. I'm sorry, that's gross. It's probably, a little more. Yeah, it's just unacceptable, but it happens. I remember that because of a doctor telling me some stuff about that, even breathing the dust of certain areas, like at fairgrounds and stuff like that. He's like, get away. He said people come out of there with so many nasty respiratory infections. It's unbearable, unbelievable, the filth. So these people's feet were covered. So you combine that with the fact that, you know, we perspire and things, you know, feet stink and on. And now you're all the way down at the bottom of a man. He's well above you. You're man to man. All those things. It's just a state of incredible humility. It's a state of insane humility. And people don't get that. There's so many things that are literary, but people don't take them literally. Okay, they see him as a literary topic. I cannot believe the amount of stuff out there that I read that tells me why the Bible's wrong and why it's literally incorrect or literarily incorrect. And it's all over out there. They try to, you know, say, oh, look, you can't take this literally. Everything's figurative. Well, folks, let me tell you something. The minute things like the miracles that occurred, the 333 miracles of Jesus' birth, death, and resurrection, the minute those kinds of things become figurative, our Bible's dead and our faith is gone. The minute that any part of the Bible talking about what happened or will happen, you know, future prophecy, past fulfilled prophecy, or just past historical record, if it's just figurative, we're done. You've got to realize that our scripture is 100% true and accurate, never been proved otherwise. People will sit and nitpick and fine-tune. You know, I heard some gal a while ago talking about how, well, you know, a recent discovery, get this, a recent discovery, actually a lack of a discovery, she says, is beginning to cast a lot more doubt on the Bible than at any time before. Well, of course, she's a Catholic. Bizarrely doesn't believe in God, obviously, or the Bible. So what happens is they pick up some little city, you know, Shechem or whatever it is, and they go. And what's happened historically with the Bible, everything in the Bible's right. They read it, they look, they research, they study, they go dig, and boom, guess what they find? Exactly what it said was there. Okay. But there are situations where they have to dig once, twice, three, four, five, six, seven, you know, keep looking and looking and looking. So this gal that I was listening to or watching or whatever it was saying that there was a recent, attempt to dig up an old city mentioned in the Bible and it wasn't there. Oh my gosh. Well, according to her there, you know, there you go. Well, right there. It says there was a city in a certain location and we dug and it wasn't there. So the Bible's got to be a lie, right? No, I don't think so. Could it be possible that we didn't know where to dig, or maybe the Bible wasn't specific enough or whatever, you know, but to take that obvious logical conclusion to think the worst. That's probably where I'm going with this, too. One thing that is absolutely really important in life is to be positive, to think positive. You can't think the worst of everything. There's, you know, we've all dealt with those kinds of people where it's, you know, there's different, again, there's the types that are just oversensitive and, you know, everything's taken the wrong way, super defensive, can't take constructive criticism. Well, they'll tell you they can take constructive criticism. It just has to be packaged right. Well, everybody packages their words differently. Each one of us is given skill sets from God in our speech patterns and whatnot. And, you know, frankly, you want to be brief, be brilliant, and be gone, as the Rangers say. You know, you want to just get it out there, get it done, be expedient, not bloviate. You know, there's times when you talk to friends or just hang out on a night over dinner. That's when you just talk. There's a difference between talking and bloviating, though. I'm sure you can tell by the name of the word. But we want, you know, what comes out of our mouth is so profoundly impactive on who we are. It's interesting that God says in the Bible that it's not what man puts into his body that defiles him, but what comes out of his mouth. I mean, think about that. That's pretty interesting stuff. That is, again, contrary to our understanding of everything. It's like, no, you have to put something physically in your body that defiles you. How can something you say defiles you? Because you're thinking, well, if I'm saying it, I'm already thinking it. If I'm already thinking it, it's already inside of me. So how can saying it defile me? Well, here's how. We create with our mind and then our mouth and then our hands, okay? In order to get something out of your mouth that is severely inappropriate or destructive, you have to create it in your mind first, right? So now you're thinking it, but at that point you can cast it away pretty quick. We have so much power in our speech. It's a codification. It's a solidification of facts and details. When we speak something, that is one area that psychology and psychiatry doesn't understand because it's not based on God, His Word, and the Bible. When we speak something, it becomes more. Not only if someone's within listening distance, it defines who we are, but it solidifies those thoughts and brings them into reality. It is an interesting concept to think about because it's such an intangible. I mean, our intangible speech is so powerful that we have to understand that we control within ourselves the ability to, you know, like the proverb says, we can speak death or life. And that's for us to, you know, to determine, not for someone else. Plenty of people that would like to tell us what to say and how to say it. Frankly, it says, Jesus said, you know, woe to you who have, you know, too many friends. In other words, everybody's your buddy. You want everyone to be your friend because he says, you know, basically you're heading the wrong direction. We'll say that. He tells you that you're going to end up somewhere that you probably don't want to. And be a flake and be easily bought out. And again, and woe to you, those who want to be a friend or, you know, don't want to offend people. Why is it? It's always fear. There's always a component of fear within us that drives us away from confronting our own demons. And sometimes our own demons are confronting other people's demons. You know, who wants to do that? Nobody. And I've, you know, dealt with a friend here recently that's been in those situations. And he's like, I just don't want to deal with it. I want to kind of, you know, go about and do my own thing and have a good time. And I was like, yeah, me too. But the fact is, that's not what God calls us to do. God doesn't guarantee us happiness, folks. That word is out. Forget happiness. Forget happy. You might be like, hey, wait a minute, Kevin, I want to be happy and positive. No, he talks about the fruits of the Spirit are what? Love, peace, you know, joy, or love, joy, peace. Joy and peace. Patience, kindness, goodness, all that stuff. But he says there's, you know, love is the root of all. Without love, as Paul said, we're a clanging gong or a whatever, a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal or vice versa, right? We're just obnoxious with what we say. If we have no love, if we have love, in other words, God, Jesus, and we're filtering what's coming out of our mouth through that, we're edifying ourselves as well as edifying our environment. When we edify somebody else, encourage, pick up, lift up, we encourage, pick up, edify, lift up ourselves. That is a fact. That is all throughout the Bible. You can create so much with your speech. When it comes to leadership, leadership, like I said, is not a tyrannical station in life. It's that's command, that's power, that's control, that's your boss, man, or whatever. But whether your boss operates at a really high spiritual level or at the lowest of the lows, he's still your boss. So he maintains that earthly hierarchical position, but where it changes is in leadership. We can be better leaders than our boss, or our boss can be better leaders than us. Leadership is living it. It's doing it yourself better than those around you. It's not putting yourself in a position of arrogance or, you know, avoiding people that you think are below you or beneath or whatever it may be. Leadership, that's kind of piety. That's what happened. That's the wrong spirit. Leadership is living life the way that you believe is best. It's setting a good example. It's edifying those around you. It's you want to have a sphere of influence, you know? It's kind of like a nuclear blast has. They have, you know, there's the center, the eye of the explosion, and then you get the ripple effect. When you walk with God and you want to be a good leader, you begin to create a ripple effect. Obviously, you're going to impact other people, but you're also, in general, creating a nuclear zone, if you will, a fallout zone of positivity and glory to God, right? And that's kind of important. I would think you'd agree with that, that's what we do. That's the impact that we want to have on this planet. As believers especially, that's, I think, what we're called to be, is extremely positive, uplifting, upbeat, you know, people that have, you know, hugely positive impacts. I guess you're following me there. Leadership is such an important facet that we have to realize. I mean, it was later in life that I started to realize that everyone's a leader, you know. And God says what? He who is faithful with little will be given much. Obviously, that applies first to, you know, physical product. If God gives you a certain amount of money, sort of the parable of the talents thing, right? You go out, you use it, you do well, you double it. It says they went out immediately and, you know, invested and did well. That's, you know, faithful with little be given much. To him who much is given, much is required. So be careful what you pray for. You can pray for wisdom, wealth, you know, family, whatever it is. Just be careful what you pray for because God will answer it. And it may not be exactly how you had it in mind. So there we are on that. I think when it comes down, every one of us, the other way to look at your sphere of influence or leadership is what I would call the power of persuasion. And some of us are more persuasive than others. Some are better salespeople than others. I mean, sales, the term sales often gets a negative connotation because we think of the hard closing car salesman. But sales, in a way, is something each of us does every day in our lives. We have to go out and we have to persuade. We have to persuade, you know, the dentist to get our daughter into the office quicker because she's having a lot of pain, or, you know, we have to persuade the person at the grocery store to open or to going back and see if they have more things of these specific items available. Or, you know, everywhere you go, you're persuading. You're persuading all the time. You're talking to people and you're persuading. If you don't persuade, you must have someone else in your life doing it for you, because you can't go through life without doing it. But leadership is making the most out of who we are and what we have and what we've been given. Sitting around, having the mentality that the best life is the life either of extreme codependency on somebody else who makes money, or being alone, drawing a Social Security paycheck or something, that is so not remotely close to what God ever intended for us to be. God put Adam and Eve in the garden. She was later, but he said Adam was put in the garden to tend to the garden. He was there to work from day one, not kick back on the sandy shores and have a special, you know, fig drink that the angels prepared for him. That's not the high point of our existence. The high point of our existence is work, is being good at it. And what's most important, and I read a thing about this a while ago, is not, it's the, you know, the real, the most inefficient, unsuccessful people I've dealt with typically believe in self-evaluation, and they want to put themselves in, they earnestly, repetitively end up in situations where they are their own boss, but not in a good way, but because they want to do their own self-judgment or self-evaluation, because they're not comfortable being taught and led by others. And that, again, you think about a parable of talents, leadership, sphere of influence, all those things. If we're constantly falling into our comfort zone, you know, John 5:44, I think I covered on the last show, it says, how can you believe in the one and only God, or you say you believe, how can you believe when you seek the glory that comes from man, but don't seek the glory that comes from the only God? That's the problem when we're out there, folks, is we've got to be prepared in our hearts at all times for anything. We just want to be pre-prepared to respond properly, and that comes through repetition and practice in our minds, in our speech, and in our actions, like we talked before. Leadership. I mean, leadership is an important part of who we are. Basically, what you know, if it's confusing and, you know, you struggle with a leader, they're a good leader. Well, they're a, you know, there's somebody who may have been appointed to a leader, but a lot of times you'll find out in various groups of people operating or functioning in different arenas, the real leader is behind the scenes. That's the person everybody really looks up to, because they live the way everybody else, well, wants to live. But probably more importantly, they have compassion and real empathy. They don't talk at people. They talk with people. They listen. They understand. They comprehend. They go out of their way to you know, show some level of servanthood, not extreme, obviously, because we're all in a job getting paid to do our job. But they go out of their way in the name of Christ, hypothetically, hopefully, but not always. Sometimes non-believers or other whatever faiths, but they go out of their way to do what's right, to help another person, to do what's good. As long as it's in their power to do it, they do it. And that's another, you know, there's a scripture there too. If you have within yourself the power to give to somebody, you know, what they need or what's theirs, and you fail to do it, it's a sin. So if we have, you know, a spouse or children or whatever that we're letting sit around and do nothing, and maybe we're doing it because we're in a second or third marriage and we have a step-parent status, and we get vilified or whatever, but you know what, then we have to improve our tact, our diplomacy, our wording, and we have to stand up for what's right. We may not be able to change that situation, but as a parent, you've got to be able to set the bar where it goes. We definitely don't want to be the kind of person that's enabling, in other words, encouraging or allowing people to sit around and sulk and pout and feel sorry for themselves or play video games or whatever it may be. We have to deal with that because we're accountable. As parents, we need to realize, in fact, in all of our spheres of influence, when I speak about this stuff, even God, you know, he knows what your sphere of influence is. He knows what impact you can have on your family. And a few of the guys at work and maybe at a restaurant you go to regularly, or whether you go down and get your oil changed or your tires rotated or whatever, when you walk in, you're very positive, upbeat, hey, how you guys doing, you know, and if you get a chance, you talk a little bit deeper and get into their lives. Not overkill, that can get a little awkward, but you know what I mean. Just interpersonal relations, just sincere interpersonal relations. That is the beginning of leadership respect. And remember, again, guys, you know, in studies, study after study after study, men say they'd rather be respected than loved. What the reason for that is, men feel loved through respect. Women feel loved. Well, men need to be respected to be loved. Women need to be loved to feel respected. And it's really, there's some opposites there. Imagine that. God made it that way. But, you know, that's, and so we have to radiate exactly what the Bible says we need. We've got to give out to others. We have to be a reflection base, an amplification module, if you will, and pass God's love on down. Leadership and strength. People get, as Christians, I run into this stuff. People that are raised in Christian homes, not always, I mean, but sometimes people are raised in Christian homes. They're just super lukewarm, apathetic, lethargic, depressed, you know, not really upbeat because everything's kind of been done for them. I mean, even the acceptance of Christ as their Savior that maybe their parents did, they never, you know, they have to go through that period of time. And that's where the teenage rebellion comes in. And that's where it even gets worse in Christian homes a lot, because they're rebelling. They know they're not just rebelling against you, they're rebelling against God or the way you presented God to them and the way you lived God. So when you live God in your heart, soul, mind, and strength, as He asks us to, children see that. They feel it. They know it's real. What really drives kids crazy is hypocrisy. A friend of mine was in charge of a large youth ministry at a very big church. And when I was there visiting him, and we were helping some kids out and just doing whatever we could, and a situation erupted where a kid came in and his parents were mad, and it was a step-parent situation, and it was the hypocrisy that was driving this kid crazy. His parents, his mom especially, would live a life of immorality, essentially, and then come to him, tell him he needs to be adhering to all these Christian principles. She'd hang stuff over his head when he hadn't sinned, but she would assume everything was a sin. In other words, a conscious effort not to do it, the sin of omission, not the sin of commission. In other words, you don't commit the sin. You sin by omission. As James said, and I've mentioned before, he who knows what's right to do but fails to do it, for him it is a sin. It's so important that our fears will often drive us to act as if we're doing things intentionally. In other words, acting as if we don't want to engage, or we don't want to get involved with this or that situation, where we're really selling out our leadership skills based on fear. So I just want to tell you, you know, before we move on, fear is the great evil. Fear is the great root. It's the great battle of mankind. It is the destroyer of all that is good. It is the opposite of what God wants us to be and wants us to see and wants us to live. And so fear needs to be addressed head on if you've got it. If you're dealing with, if people that have higher levels of fear, they'll have baggage, they'll have things stuffed down, and you know, there's stuff to cope with or deal with in order to get that out, but it's going to be uncomfortable. Because if you pack something down long enough, hard enough, you know, like Isaac Newton, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, right? You know, the greater the action, the greater the reaction. And it actually gets proportional, where you can stack it up and save it up until something finally bursts. For every action, pouring water into a massive wood pool or wood-sided pool, whatever, you pour enough in, eventually, boom, the wall blows out. Well, it wasn't the one action, it was the accumulation of all the actions that cause that. And that also applies to our lives as well. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. If you don't see an action right away, then there's probably a bigger one coming. Maybe people are dealing with it, coping with it, praying about it, figuring it out. But we have to realize that everything we do or say has a rebuttal, a universal rebuttal. I love when people say, oh, the universe did this for me. The universe did that. The universe is full of surprises. I heard the other night on some stupid show when I was sifting through the TV, which nobody listens to watches TV anymore, by the way, I'm hearing. But, you know, I heard something pretty incredible had happened in this guy's life, and he said, well, the universe is just filled with surprises. Well, he'd been prayed over and everything else by other people. Well, no, the universe was created by God. It's not the universe does nothing to you. It does nothing for you, except maybe sustain your life existence. But that's because God put us here. And when we talk about, you know, God rolling up the heavens or wrapping it all up, I mean, if he can create it, why can't he do that? That is what I want to know. So, you know, the whole positivity thing is really important, and I think we've got to do there. We've got to look closely at our fear, overcome it, and here, principles of persuasion. There's something we can cover another day there. I think what we'll do today is I'll try to actually make a little better headway on the Federal Reserve stuff with my little bit of time. So I'm going to kind of rack this out. So we talked over a few shows. I've kind of started and never really taken off with this, but you know, we talked about you cannot live on a paycheck anymore. Folks, you go back in time, what money was worth then, what it's worth now. I won't get into all that, but we've got hyperinflation. Since 1913, the creation of the Federal Reserve, we have already surpassed considerably the loss of 99.5% of the spending power of the dollar. Okay? We have to take that into consideration with anything we do with our money. Precious metals-based assets were designed by God as money. They were the root of real money. Ha ha, you thought I was going to say root of evil. No, they're not. The love of money is the root of evil. Gold's money, so if you love it, I guess, you know. I've seen people actually try to say, well, I just don't want to fall in love with it. I had a guy tell me that one time. I just don't want to really, you know, get attracted to it because it's the love of money. It's not the love of the physical money. It's the love of what it gives you, what you can do with it, the power, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. You know, money is an absolute necessity. You talk about leadership, there you go. If you start operating and handling your money with character and integrity, you have begun a wonderful journey of leadership for someone someday. Then you just expand those acts into your life. You pray, you seek God, you do this, let him lead you and guide you, and you'll have an exceptional experience. Okay? So we are at a position where our dollar has been hyperinflated at such a rate you can't even mentally comprehend it. I was just figuring there was a situation from 1950s when an enormous amount of diamonds was stolen from a company, and they said at the time the ransom was 100 million pounds, which is, at the time, the pound sterling. Well, the pound sterling now is probably like 50% off of us, but back then it was, you know, double, triple, whatever. It was, you know, the dollar was looking pretty good. We just finished the war, and the exchange from the dollar to the pound was different. But anyway, we were calculating. They said that 100 million pound ransom. By today's standards, it's seven times that, I think we figured, which is 700 million pounds, that what they call the currency, the pound sterling. Don't ask me what, because it's the royal, official, sacred, you know, whatever. But the thing is like, that's a sevenfold. And granted, it's been 60 years, but that's a sevenfold increase. People don't realize that. If you'd have to make if you made, you know, $5,000 a year then, you'd have to be making actually on that, in this case, the exchange. I was using the interest rates from the Consumer Price Index, which are deceptive. In the 1950s, if you made $5,000 a year, you were living as if you were making about $75,000 now. Say, depends. Take out a bunch of the stuff we have now that you didn't have then. $55,000 to $60,000 to live. That's how inflation has taken over. That's what the Federal Reserve System is designed and was designed to do. It's designed to usher in socialism into this nation. Because if they crack America, you know, there's all these countries out there that are like, you know, a friend of mine in Europe in London. Oh, everybody's texting me. Everybody in Europe hates Trump. And, they, you know, we traveled, my wife and I went way down to the South Pacific, down to the Australia, you know, New Zealand area a while ago. You run into these people. They want, and this has been really bad, even during Obama, you know, they loved Obama. Oh, the whole world loved him. We want, you know, we want more of that. They want to watch us wimp out, fall down. You know, we're not America, folks. We're the one and only country that every evil empire in the world wants a piece of now. They would love to see us fall and fail more than anything you can imagine. And the minute you get someone like Obama disarming this nation and breaking down the ranks and the military and all that stuff, you are making these, the evil monsters of the world, lick their chops. They're just getting ready. They're hoping you keep going. They're hoping you're that dumb. They meet with people like Obama who doesn't get it. And I love the attacks on Trump. They just assume he doesn't have a clue. You know, they've called him every name under the sun. And I'm going to have to go ahead and disagree with that there, obviously, you know. So, okay. So let's bust out what we got here. So we said Churchill never was so much owed by so many to so few. That's the beginning of the debt crisis driven by the Federal Reserve System. We're heading towards socialism. We're in a world, folks, you can't even believe. Politicians, they don't tell you what, they're not giving you their resume other than baloney. They're telling you what they can give you if you elect them. And then they lie and twist their prior accomplishments. I get all that. You know, when I was the mayor of Timbuktu, you know, we got to the point where people were flying in from all over the world just because our economy was so amazing. And they just wanted to see how a little town could do such a thing or whatever. You know, it's just the wrong perspective. It's not right. So the political promises, those are politicians. They cost us money. All they do in campaigns now is promise, promise, promise. Well, they're empty promises. They're broken promises. They're ultimately lies. We don't hold them accountable. We'll hold conservatives accountable, but never the liberals. I mean, really, it's that bad. It's that bad. So I mentioned at the end of last show, our whole system operates on deficit or debt spending. Every dollar we have or create is backed by debt. I know. It's foolish. It makes no sense. It's contrary to your natural intuition. I've tried to explain it to people. It doesn't make sense. And then they added in, you know, like 15 layers of monetary transfer and bond issuance and all this stuff. So not only does it confuse us, the consumer, to a point of oblivion where we just give up and walk away, but it also enriches and lines the pockets of these countless banks that are out there that get to participate. And trust me, there are dozens. And it is a mess. J.P. Morgan set it up on purpose that way, and there it has lied. It's so powerful. Money, you know, there's people that you've heard, I care not, you know, who votes in the election, but who counts the votes, you know, is basically one perspective on things. But it's always, you know, the monetary aspects of it. And the liberals, it's like the conservatives are always trying to explain, hey, we can't pay for this, we can't do it, you know, it's just, but people aren't getting it. So let's keep going here. We have the deficit spending issue, that's debt borrowed money. And I said Trump may be different in many ways, but he's not much different when it comes to deficit spending. The only positive to Trump's spending, as I said, is that he's worked to cease nonsensical, irrational, and undeserved spending on our overseas adversaries. I talked about Nikki Haley and her study when she was the ambassador to the UN, where she showed that, you know, we're shelling out money to people that vote against us consistently in the UN. And that, you know, that's just foolishness. That's when you have money just coming out your ears. That's debt gained money. It's not real. It's not hard-earned, hard-asset money, and we lose our minds. These politicians, they can do anything they want. And, you know, you think there's runaway spending, you're right. But the problem is a lot of that spending is so corrupt and crooked and undermining. And this Trump impeachment, if you, you know, I don't really have the time, but if you go back and you look at what the Democrats have done over history, they're accusing him of extraordinarily, you know, small acts that they've done themselves that he's never done. They hate the guy. They've wanted to impeach him since he got in. I know I cover that topic a lot, but we're in the middle of the attempted impeachment of a U.S. sitting president, which is a very unique time. So I've got notes here. I guess I'll get to you next time about the Treasury, how they borrow money, issuing a bond. This is some notes I wrote a while ago. Maybe I can explain it so you understand it. Probably not, because it's kind of a mess. But anyway, we're in a new year. It's a great time to get in. I mean, the markets are, you know, a little topsy-turvy. There's a lot going on, folks. And no matter how high the market gets, it's going to be too high. Precious metals are solid. Precious metals-based assets make a lot of sense. 401ks and IRAs, move them now. Why not? I mean, how often do you get to, you know, sell high and buy low? That's what you got to do. So give us a call, 444-0044. Give us some positive reviews. Go to Google, Yelp. I always forget. But, you know, Yahoo and where. Just give us three nice five-star ratings. Call us. We'll verify it. And you get two nice quality Morgan Silver dollars. Take care. Thanks for tuning in. God bless, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.